I suppose that the sight of blood is something that is more abhorrent to our generation than to the generations that have gone before us. After all, in the societies before us, where there was so much done as far as people raising their own animals and slaughtering animals for food, the sight of blood became something that they were used to, and yet in our day and age, it's something that people tend to faint at even. I've even heard of young ladies growing up wanting to become nurses until they find out that they really can't stand the sight of blood. And that's kind of a something you have to be able to do if you're going to work as a nurse. So it's something that we have not seen so much of ourselves just because of the kind of society in which we live. Blood is, of course, as we all know, very critical to us. We know that we're taught in school, in junior high, even before junior high, some of the things that blood does for us as it moves air and oxygen and nutrients throughout the body. And one of the things, though, that we are taught in medical sorts of professions, something that may not sound quite right when you first hear it, but it is, the more you think about it, the more you realize it to be true, is that the loss of blood will bring on death more quickly than will someone who cannot breathe. After all, if you're breathing, why, you're getting the oxygen into your lungs for the blood to take. But if there is no blood to take that around to the rest of the body, then what good is it? You have to have the blood there to take care of that. In fact, one of the changes that has taken place in CPR since I first took it and knew it when I left emergency medicine is that when they teach the layman CPR, they no longer teach any kind of mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. They just teach people to do the compressions of the heart. They figure there's probably going to be enough oxygen in the lungs to keep things going until help arrives. So that in itself, I think, shows the importance of the blood in our lives. Well, just as the blood is critical to our physical lives, so it is critical to our spiritual lives. And we need to understand that as the scriptures teach us concerning the matter of the blood. That comes out particularly in Leviticus, in the book of Leviticus, where you have the various offerings and the sprinkling of the blood on the altar, the importance that God places on the blood. And so our verse for the month of March is that we take from the book of Leviticus is Leviticus 17:11. And it's exactly the verse that I expected to be on this list for the book of Leviticus, because it's really the theme verse of this book. Let's read this book, this chapter, this whole chapter, for our scripture lesson this afternoon, knowing that we're going to be zeroing in on verse 11 for the preaching of the word. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to Aaron and his sons and to all the Israelites and say to them, 'This is what the Lord has commanded. Any Israelite who sacrifices an ox or a lamb or a goat in the camp or outside of it, instead of bringing it to the entrance to the tent of meeting to present it as an offering to the Lord in front of the tabernacle of the Lord, that man shall be considered guilty of bloodshed. He has shed blood and must be cut off from his people. This is so the Israelites will bring to the Lord the sacrifices they are now making in the open fields. They must bring them to the priest, that is, to the Lord at the entrance to the tent of meeting, and sacrifice them as fellowship offerings. The priest is to sprinkle the blood against the altar of the Lord at the entrance to the tent of meeting, and burn the fat as an aroma pleasing to the Lord. They must no longer offer any of the sacrifices to the goat idols, to whom they prostitute themselves. This is to be a lasting ordinance for them and for the generations to come. Say to them, any Israelite or alien, any alien living among them, who offers a burnt offering or sacrifice and does not bring it to the entrance to the tent of meeting to sacrifice it to the Lord, that man must be cut off from his people. Any Israelite or any alien living among them who eats any blood, I will set my face against that person who eats blood and will cut him off from his people. For the life of a creature is in the blood, and I have given it to you to make atonement for yourselves on the altar. It is the blood that makes atonement for one's life. Therefore I say to the Israelites, none of you may eat blood, nor may any alien living among you eat blood. Any Israelite or any alien living among you who hunts any animal or bird that may be eaten must drain out the blood and cover it with earth. Because the life of every creature is its blood. That is why I have said to the Israelites, you must not eat the blood of any creature, because the life of every creature is its blood. Anyone who eats it must be cut off. Anyone, whether native-born or alien, who eats anything found dead or torn by animals, wild animals, must wash his clothes and bathe with water, and he will be ceremonially unclean until evening. Then he will be clean, but if he does not wash his clothes and bathe himself, he will be held responsible. May God indeed bless to us the reading of this portion of his word. For most people today, the very thought of eating blood is abhorrent. And yet, it's not uncommon in many societies. In fact, I'm sure that there are people who alive today, even in this country, who can remember blood pudding and things of that nature. So this may seem strange to us, and yet it is something that could very easily take place and that was to be addressed here. So God addresses it, and we see very clearly here that God prohibits the eating of blood in the Old Covenant. It's very clear. We don't have to guess about that at all. But this chapter in and of itself makes that very clear. God had called his people to be holy. Remember back in Exodus chapter 19, just before he gives the Ten Commandments there at Mount Sinai, he calls them to be a holy nation. They are set apart to him, and so they are to be his people. The eating of blood was forbidden, as we see, but also anyone who would eat blood, it says, must be cut off. It was as if he would be considered a murderer. And now, this is not the first time we come across this in the scriptures. In fact, in Leviticus chapter 7, and earlier actually in chapter 3, where we have some of the offerings that are mentioned, it's also said, don't eat the blood, but the blood is to be sprinkled on the altar, because it is there to make atonement. And then God says to them through Moses in this 11th verse, the life of a creature is in the blood, and I have given it to you to make atonement for yourselves on the altar. It is the blood that makes atonement for one's life. Very interesting term, though, that is used here for life. It is the same term that is used back in Genesis chapter 2, that God breathed into man, into the nostrils of man, the breath of life, and he became a living soul. Nephesh It's the same word that he uses here, which is translated life in our Bibles. As it is here in the New American Standard that I have in front of me as well. For the life of the flesh is in the blood. That is, the soul of the flesh is in the blood, if we wanted to take it more literally. And it is the blood by reason of the soul that makes atonement. So you see the close connection that there is between the blood and the life or the soul. That helps you to understand this whole matter of why it might be counted murder for you to eat the blood, if that is the soul. They were to sacrifice to the Lord alone. Now, that should be obvious to us. It should have been obvious to them. But apparently it wasn't, or at least it wasn't in practice. There is the instruction that is given here that they are not to sacrifice to the goat idols or goat demons, as it is in some places. Remember, they had come out of Egypt, and there was sacrificing to the goat idols that they had in Egypt. No doubt, people of Israel had witnessed that. Some had taken part in it, and so they continued to do that. But God says, no, you're not to do that because you are holy to me. You're to be separate to me. And so you no longer sacrifice to any of those things, but to me alone. And when they offered an animal on an altar, why, of course, its blood was to be sprinkled on the altar or poured out on it. And here in this passage, we read about them, slaughtering animals for food. And he says to them, now, when you do that, you have to do it here at my tabernacle. You don't just do it anywhere you want to. And the reason is that they had been sacrificing to other gods, their so-called gods. And so they were no longer to do that, but they were to bring their sacrifice or their animal to the tabernacle, and it was to be a fellowship offering that would be offered to God, and then they would have that meat for food. Now, do you see a problem that they might run into with that when they get up into Israel and into the land of Canaan? By the time you get to the land of Canaan and the people are spread through the land, the people up north, it takes them, 3 days' journey to get down to Jerusalem. And so if they want to have some meat to eat, would they have to take that down to Jerusalem and slaughter it and then take the food, the meat, without refrigeration up to their home, whether it's in Nazareth or wherever it might be? And so when you find them coming to the promised land, Moses gives them instructions in Deuteronomy chapter 12, 40 years, remember, later than this, in chapter 12, verse 15, that there is a change that takes place. Nevertheless, you may slaughter your animals in any of your towns and eat, eat as much of the meat as you want, as if it were gazelle or deer, according to the blessing the Lord your God gives you. So there's a change that takes place that allows them, when they go into the land, to eat the animals there. But you notice in the very next verse, Deuteronomy 12:16, you must not eat the blood, pour it out on the ground like water. They were never to eat the blood. And that was always forbidden them. But now they would be allowed to slaughter in their towns and villages and have the meat without having to go down to Jerusalem to the tabernacle in order to offer a fellowship offering. So the eating of blood was recognized as murder in Israel, and we have a couple of instances that come immediately to mind for me anyway, where this comes into play. One is in 1 Samuel 14. This is the case where Jonathan and his armor bearer had gone up and struck down about 20 Philistines, and the Israelite army suddenly came out. And when they saw the Philistines fleeing before Jonathan and his armor bearer, and they are fighting them all day. But Saul had made an oath saying, anyone who eats before he is avenged of the Philistines is cursed. Well, Jonathan, you might recall, didn't hear that curse. So as he's going through the forest, during this battle, he finds some honey, puts the end of his staff in there, into the honey, and then licks it off. And somebody says to him, wait a minute, your dad said you're not supposed to taste anything until he's avenged of his enemies. Well, they come to the end of the battle, and people just start slaughtering animals and eating with the blood rather than having it drained out. And Saul tells them to stop that. That's not what they're to do. He gets a rock where they can drain out the blood and so honor the Lord by doing things as he had commanded. That's in 1 Samuel 14. Another event that is not able to be understood, I don't think, unless you see this prohibition that God gives, is in 2 Samuel 23, where in the listing of the mighty men of David. The Philistines had taken over Bethlehem. And David just kind of, the picture I have is he's just kind of wondering out loud, oh, that I could have water from the well of Bethlehem. How wonderful that could be. After all, that was his hometown. And three of the mighty men go to Bethlehem at the risk of their own lives and get some water and bring it to David. And what does David do with it? You might think that in great gratitude he would drink that, but instead he says, I cannot drink this because it is the blood of men. They risk their lives, and so he pours it out on the ground as an offering to God, because he felt that by drinking that water, it was the same thing as being a murderer, even as anyone who had eaten blood would have done. So there are a couple of examples where this law comes into play. Now, the point that is made, particularly in verse 11, is that the blood is reserved for atonement. The blood is reserved for atonement. And so in the shedding of blood, atonement is made. Obviously, you can see immediately how that's pointing to Jesus Christ. After all, nothing short of death and the poured out soul would do. Remember the instruction that was given to Adam and Eve. In the day that you eat thereof, you will surely die. The sin brings about death. And so nothing short of death in a soul that is poured out, nothing short of that would do for the atonement for any sin. Life could be delivered only by death. It sounds strange to us, but that's the way God had set things up. Because after all, you know, if you die, then you don't have life, unless of course you take into account resurrection, that God gives life to the dead, so that those who die in him are given life, and we who die to the flesh, who die to sin, are raised up to life everlasting. So there's this great exchange that takes place where one dies in order to give another life. And that's why we call it the substitutionary atonement. That something is substituted in the place of the sinner. It's pictured in the Old Testament because there you have the animal, whether a lamb or a goat or an ox or whatever it might be, that is substituted in the place of the sinner, so that as he brings his animal to the tabernacle, he places his hands on that animal. And if you really look at the language of the Jews there, it's as if he leans on that animal, pressing down on that animal, as if there's this, the exchange of sin going from the one who is sacrificing to the animal that is going to be sacrificed. So the sins were transferred, and there is also then transferred back the other direction, the life which we do not deserve. So that as the animal was placed on the altar, it died, and the one who sacrificed lived. His blood, the blood of that animal, would be poured out on the altar. Some of it sprinkled perhaps around the sides of the altar, depending on which sacrifice it might be. And of course, on the Day of Atonement, why there was a sacrifice, or there's the blood of the sacrifice that was taken into the Ark of the Covenant and sprinkled. Well, the cross is the altar. Not the altar that the people of Israel had in the Old Covenant, but it is the altar of the New Covenant. Now, the thrusting of the spear into Jesus' side was important, not only in order to fulfill that a couple of prophecies, one of which was he was pierced for our transgressions, and another, not a bone of his would be broken. But remember what happened when the spear was thrust into him and the blood was poured out and ran down, no doubt, onto the cross, onto that altar. And so that the picture that the people of Israel had in the Old Covenant is brought into view in the crucifixion of Christ. The blood runs out of his side, down his flesh, onto the cross, and perhaps even onto the ground. The two places that blood was to be placed, on the altar or on the ground. Jesus' blood gushed out from that thrusting of the spear. It was blood that was shed for sinners as his life was poured out on that altar that we call the cross. Now think about this instruction that you're not to eat the blood. And come now to the time of the new covenant. And it's something that sounds very strange. Because what does Jesus say to those who are with him after the feeding of the 5,000? Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no part in me. On the one hand, here the blood is forbidden them, and now it is commanded to us. And when we come to the sacrament, he says, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Drink it." Is it any wonder that the Jews were confused when Jesus said to them that they were to drink his blood and eat his flesh? That's in John chapter 6, verse 53. Jesus said to them, "I tell you the truth, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in me. And going on, whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day." It's a reversal, isn't it? A reversal from the earlier instruction. By eating the blood, they would have been considered a murderer in the Old Covenant. But in the New Covenant, by partaking, drinking of the blood, we are redeemed murderers. We are given life. We have no life without the flesh and blood of Christ. Your flesh and blood and mine, because of our sinful natures, can never suffice for us. We have to have Christ. We have to have His blood that was poured out. His blood that stained the cross, the altar. His blood that dripped down onto the ground. We have to have His blood because that is the blood, that is the soul that gives life. Now, how do you do that? How do you partake of His flesh and blood? Well, certainly it is by coming to Him, by coming to Christ. Obviously, we are not cannibalistic, and He is not talking in a cannibalistic way. But as you look back at what else He has to say there in John 6 to the crowd that has come to meet Him after the feeding of the 5,000. Remember, He had fed the 5,000. The disciples went across on the lake. Jesus came walking on the lake toward them, and the storm that the disciples were fighting immediately stopped, and they were brought to shore. But many people came, and as He spoke to them, He said, "It's in coming to Me. It's in coming to Me that you have life. All that the Father gives to Me will come to Me, and I will never drive them away. For I have come down from heaven not to do My will, but the will of Him who sent Me." By actively believing in Him, that is, by doing those things that come from faith, you are eating and drinking the flesh and the blood of Christ. You're trusting in Him in order that He might be your Redeemer, that He might be your life. Obviously, we do this in the sacrament, but not just in the sacrament. We come to Him daily as we call upon Him in prayer, as we read His word, and we do so in order that we might grow through that to walk by faith. It is a tremendous change that Christ has brought about, isn't it? From back in the Old Testament saying, the one that drinks this blood is the one who will be cut off. He must be cut off from the covenant people. To now He says, you cannot be my servant except you eat My flesh and drink My blood. To see the life is the life that I give to you. It doesn't come from an animal or from any other person. It is only the blood that comes from Christ. And if you do not have the blood of Christ, if you do not partake of the blood of Christ, you will not have life. Because it's His blood that delivers you from death.